Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Howdy, everybody. Glenn the Geek here from very snowy Lexington, Kentucky.
And I'm Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona, where it was 70 degrees yesterday. And you're listening to Horses in the Morning for January 26, 2011, episode 63, sponsored by Back on Track. Good morning, horse people.
The lamp is burning low upon my tabletop. Snow. Softly falling.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. And since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. Man, it does.
Sleigh bells ring, are you listening? Snow is glistening, a beautiful sight. We're happy tonight, walking in a winter wonderland. Gone away.
The wind is freezing all around, and the snow keeps falling down. I'm still here and you are gone. The city's cold and winter's come. Jamie,
I played that for two reasons. One is the Northeast is getting hit with another frickin' blizzard this year. And the second reason was you're going to be in it on Friday. How fun for you.
Can I just publicly say how absolutely ridiculous it is that you're making me go to Philadelphia at the end of January? Hello? Is that the dumbest thing ever?
Do you even own long underwear, Jamie?
I know. I have to go shopping. I'm telling you. I have to go shopping to prepare for a trip to Philadelphia because some crazy guy is making me go.
Well, we are so excited to see you. They're getting 8 to 10 inches of snow in King of Prussia. We'll be on Friday. And so I would definitely prepare to be, you know, in the winter weather. It'll be a little different than you're used to, although it's going to be somewhat warmer. It's supposed to be in the mid-30s, so that won't be too bad.
Oh, wow, mid-30s. That sounds awesome. I mean, let me get straight, boss. I am excited to see you and your lovely wife and meet Helena and all that, blah, blah, blah. However, I just cannot believe that these people hold this thing in Philadelphia. There are so many warmer horse places to go than Philadelphia. God.
You know they tried to do this in Orlando and nobody went. So they moved it back to Philadelphia. I would much rather be going to Orlando this week and meeting you in the happiest place on earth than going to Philadelphia.
What's wrong with a little trip to Disney World? Nothing. Okay.
Nothing.
So,
exactly.
So, that'll be fun. I've got to go to, you know, REI and get some Outback gear to be able. Cross-country skiing is what I'm going to need to get out of the hotel. So, I'm excited. Sounds great. I'm thrilled.
All right, we'll see. Well, we'll definitely be seeing you in the snow on Friday. I'm so excited to just bring you into the cold. Jennifer is up next because she's got a lot of things to do today, a lot of guests, a lot of stuff going on. So we'll let her tell us what's on the show today.
Well, today we are going famous on Horses in the Morning. We've got famous horsemanship clinician Michael Richardson, soon-to-be famous fashions from Courtney Young, and famously fascinating info from the Horse Health Report. And, of course, we've got the infamous premeditated pranks ridiculous jokes and shocking double entendre from Glenn and Jamie.
Holy cow. I need a
dictionary. Can't live up.
Well, that was a good one, Jennifer. I wanted to do a programming note, a couple items of business here this morning. We were supposed to have Sean Florida on today, and the infamous Raider, and he will be on next week, but he had a change in plans. So I did get a call, or I just got an email 2 seconds ago while we were talking, Jamie, from our friend Michelle. Remember we said about her horse Sprite? We've been keeping an eye on Sprite here on the show over the last couple of weeks, who had colic surgery a couple of weeks ago. Just went back in for colic surgery, and I got a note from her that says, will you please ask the listeners to send good thoughts and energy to Sprite today? She had another surgery Monday night, and we will start feeding her today. This is a big point to see if the digestive tract will start to work and the repairs to the small intestine worked. Thank you so much. So just say a prayer for Sprite and Michelle, and there you go, Michelle. We wish you the best. And then I also got a call 2 days ago from Michael Richardson, who is the person that they did the benefit for a couple of weeks ago. Remember, we had a couple of shows where we talked about the Michael Richardson benefit. He is our friend and well-known clinician and trainer around the country who is in a wheelchair after an accident at the age of 19 and then ran into more problems last year. So, and was having just a really tough time of it, and they did this benefit for him. Well, he wants to come on and thank everybody that helped out with that, so he'll be on here in a little bit as well. And then we're going to talk to him a little bit about what happened and what caused him to have so much trouble this last year and use it as a little bit of a learning exercise for horsemen everywhere, something that we all should be aware of. So,
absolutely.
So that. And then the other one bit of a little lighter note, the other one bit of housekeeping was thanks to Katie, who posted last night on our Facebook page. Go to Horses in the Morning on Facebook. She posted the Budweiser Clydesdale Carriage Driver Test 2000, which I do not remember seeing this one. But, oh, my God, she wrote on there, she wrote, Glenn, could you pass this test? Remember, Jen is probably listening and watching. No, Katie, you know me well enough to know now I would have done the same thing that driver did, and I would not have passed the test, hands down would have not have passed. But how funny was that? It was terrific.
Yeehaw!
So if you haven't seen it,
you guys have to go watch it for sure on the Facebook page or, you know, anything. It's just classic, and it is definitely Glenn.
All and how about you? Anything new going on?
I wanted to tell you guys about, you know, as a horsewoman, and, you know, I was single for a long time. And, you know, as we women do, we with horses, you know, we have to have a lot of equipment for our horses. So I drive a big Dodge Ram 2500 quad cab diesel. 24 valve turbocharged. Yeah, I have a big truck and it's really loud. And I've got the trailer and the horse, and I packed myself around the country eventing and competing and everything all by myself. So I'm married now. And my husband, you know, being in a fighter squadron, he's a very tough, manly man with all the boys. And this is how I imagine it went. Chad was at work yesterday. And somebody says in the group, hey, does anybody have a pickup truck that I can borrow because the squadron had to move some furniture or something like that? And I imagine that Chad said, I've got a truck. I'll do it. We can move this around. I've got a truck. But what really happened, Glenn, is that Chad came home and he said, honey, can I borrow your truck? Can I please borrow your truck to move stuff at work? And I'm like, come on. Please tell me you told them that you're the one driving the girly little Audi and I'm the one driving the pickup truck. But I'm pretty sure what happens is I've got a truck. I'm manly. And he's and then he comes home, the tail between his legs. Can I borrow your truck? Does anybody else have an experience like that? Jennifer, please tell me that Glenn had to borrow your truck when you guys were dating.
Actually, she did have a truck, and I did borrow her truck on occasion when we were dating. That is correct. I always had the cars, you know. So she always had the truck. That is true. That is true. I do have a question for you. When you described your truck, you're all of 5'2". Can you even see over the dash? You have to sit on a pillow.
Listen here. Actually, somebody did tell me that when I drive the truck, because it's also a 6-speed, so you know, it's a clutch. So you actually, I mean, I almost have to lay down to push the clutch if I put the seat somewhere normal. So I have to scoot the truck, the seat really close to the steering wheel. And somebody said I look like a child at dinner time when they put the table, they push them right up to the table and start feeding them. That's what they said I look like, is a little kid in his high chair.
Do you have to have the pedal extension?
No, I don't have a pedal extension. I'm not special. I just am short. But I used to have a horse van, like one of the big lorries, the big box vans. And
you drove. How did you ever reach the pedals on that thing?
Oh, my God. It was so difficult to drive. But I remember going through I think I was on the Philadelphia Turnpike, actually. And I pull up to, you know, get my ticket and pay my Turnpike fees. And the guy... This brother looks up at me and goes, "Now, what the heck is a peanut like you driving a big old truck like that?" I can barely see over the dash in that one. But you know what? We girls, we find a way to do things, and we've got to do stuff that we have to do. So, yeah, I can drive a big truck, and so what? And, yes, my husband does have to ask to borrow my truck. I love it.
That reminds me, too. That reminds me of over the weekend. You heard last week about they arrested a whole bunch of mafia guys in New York City, about 100 and some of the top mafia guys. Well, there's been all this conversation on talk shows everywhere about the names that they all have. You know, mafia guys always have, you know, manly,
Vito,
threatening names. The knife, or, you know, that kind of thing. Well, we were talking about what would be our mafia names. And so, you know, we'll have to talk about that later in the show, at the end of the show. We'll have to come up with mafia names for the three of us. What would be our mafia names? If you have any idea, post on our Facebook page. We would love to hear what our mafia name, what you think our mafia names would be. And keep in mind, they're supposed to be a little bit menacing, or at least somewhat menacing or something.
You can call me Jamie the Truck Jennings right now. I'll take that one. I'll
or
run you
Jamie
over.
The peanut jetting.
I like the truck.
All right, we have our first guest on here. He called in today, and we really appreciate him giving a call. I talked about him a little bit earlier, and we're going to say hi to Michael Richardson. Hi, Michael, and welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I would like you to – I don't know. We don't normally do this on the show, Michael, but – you're such a gentleman that I'm going to do it, and I'm going to introduce you to Jamie, my co-host, who I think you're going to like a lot.
Hello.
Jamie, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Are you kidding me? I get to wake up and do a radio show about horses and talk to awesome people like you.
Oh, well, bless your heart. Well, that is truly a wonderful thing, and I'm honored to be on the show to visit with you, too. So thank you for that.
Now,
okay,
Michael, the
Jamie,
problem is we have to actually – we have to talk to Glenn, too. So that's the one downfall.
Yeah, you know, Glenn, I was listening to when you were talking about mafia names, and I think I should go by Guido the rest of the show.
Okay. All right, Guido. That's fine.
Yeah.
We can do that.
Guido
Jamie,
the Bruiser
the other...
or something like that.
The other thing that drives me crazy about Michael is – his radio voice. He has the best radio voice ever.
Oh, I don't know about that. No.
It's pretty.
You're very kind.
I like it. It's kind of hot. I dig it.
Yeah.
Let's start. Well, maybe we should do more of this then, I guess, huh?
Michael, thank you for coming on the show, and appreciate you giving me a call the other day. I know that you're coming on for a reason, and that's to thank everybody. I want to backtrack a little bit with you, and I hope that we can use this morning, too. We hadn't talked about this, but I got to thinking about it. I really want to use this morning as a little bit of a lesson, too, for horse people out there about what caused this latest round for you, and they should be aware of it and do a little research on it, because it's something that horse people run into. I know we had experience with it, and Jamie was saying she did as well. But why don't you say what you really wanted to say when you first came on here about the fundraiser and things?
Well, you know, there's so many emotions just come to mind, and it's just so touching. Yeah, but first, you know, I'd like to thank you and all of your listeners for having me on your program. And, you know, it's an honor to work with people and participate in sharing the message of the horse, you know, first and foremost, because that's really the common denominator, the glue that's brought us all together. And over the last 2 weeks, I've had time to reflect on the event that Bill and Susan Muncaster and Kurt and Tammy Pate organized, and, of course, all of the people countless hours and putting into this, and the volunteers. These people are a true testament to what family values are. And I really thought a lot about this whole thing and trying to figure out, well, you know, what is so touching about this in the society that we live in? And that brought a lot of thoughts and feelings. And I think that these folks, they reach out and they bring you into your families. And I see that within the horse community, that, you know, these people, you know, they'll go a mile, 10 miles, 100 miles, whatever it takes to help their fellow neighbors, their friends, and that to me is just incredible. And, I'm frankly overwhelmed not only by the financial generosity, but also the generous gifts that each of the clinicians, men and women, and the MCs, I know you had Peter Campbell on after the event, and their time that they invested in the event. And I just, you know, I don't know really what to say. When this first started back in September of last year, I really didn't want it. I was against it. I felt that, you know, there's surely other people that were in maybe need of this kindness more so than me. But after a lot of conversation with Tammy and then, of course, Bill and Susan, it just kind of evolved. And I just can't express my thanks. And what is so special about the experience is that the horse draws all of us together.
And I got to say, I just wanted to say, Michael, that this happened a couple of weeks ago, and for people who didn't hear those previous shows, this was the largest gathering of worldwide well-known clinicians that's pretty much ever happened. That you had all of them in one place, the Pirellis, and the list just went on and on, the who's who of clinicians in the world. And, of course, you have worked with most of these people in your travels around the country. That's how I met you, was at a clinic. And, you know, it was just an incredible thing that all these people did. And I would argue with you, and I know you're a gentleman and humble, but I would say you were deserving of this, and it's because of the way you've affected and touched people around the country and with your message about the horse. And, you know, I've seen you in the ring, and I've seen you in very deep footing trying to push that wheelchair around the ring and working with, you know, a colt that's not been broke. And by the end of that session, the colt is over, you know, snuggling you all over. So I would say that you are deserving, not meaning to embarrass you more already here, but I think that's important to note too. Let's first ask how you're doing now.
Well, I'm doing great. I really thank God for the Mayo Clinic and the doctors to be able to address an injury that I had and that we're continuing to deal with. But I really feel that we're definitely on the home stretch, and if I can just stay down and be patient and give it continue to give it the time that it needs to heal, I think we're going to be in good shape. But one of the things that I didn't realize about the nature of not only the Brock Kluse fight and the effects that it has on the tissue and really the devastating toxicity of their venom and what that does to the tissue, but in the case of myself with the spinal cord injury that just exacerbated it, and then the nature of what they had to do to address the wound in the reconstruction of basically my glute. Absolutely incredible. But I'm doing well, and I have to get to the eight-month mark, which is the end of July, 1st of August. And once I get past that, we're really in good shape. So each day is each day that we make here working towards that goal is a real plus, and so I'm doing quite well. So thank you for asking.
Well, we want to, you know, you cut out a little bit when you said what did happen. Michael was actually bitten by a brown recluse spider, and that's the lesson I was talking about earlier. It's the brown recluse spider is something that really all horse people should be aware of. It's mainly prevalent in the Midwest to the South to the Gulf regions down there. But we had a problem with them at our farm in Pennsylvania. And we actually, and one of the things that's bad about the brown recluse is very rarely does it kill a human, but it eats tissue, and that's what happened with you. And it can become a large area of problem. And I don't want to go into too much detail over breakfast here, but it is a big issue, and the infection that can result and everything that results from it can be a big issue. We actually had a cat that died from a brown recluse bite. And that's exactly what happened. And then on occasion, we would find them in our basement. And after the cat died, we didn't even know what one was. And then the vet told us that that's what it was. And we went looking. And what I want to encourage everybody to do, and we'll put a link to it in our show notes and on Facebook as well, is go take a look at a picture of one. They're a different looking spider in that their legs are pretty much evenly distributed around their body. And they're very small. They're not big at all, are they, Michael?
No, they're not. They're probably the size of your fingernail. I mean, they're not what you would think when you see them. And one of the things that I have learned, as you've just said, they like cool, dry, dark places. And sometimes the cool is not as much of a factor, but dark, dry places. And like down here in Texas, if we're going to if we have a storage area or you have any place that you haven't been in a while, you go in, turn the lights on, move a box or something, and then go and leave. And that gives the spiders time to take off and go in hiding, and you're less likely to be bit by them. But you've got to be so careful because, as I've experienced, and we all have experienced probably in our own right, what the negative, devastating effects that these spiders can have.
They apparently, when they're in a house, and this is where we used to find them because we had a tack shop and we shipped out of our house. We did a lot of shipping, so we had a lot of cardboard, and they really like cardboard. And the reason they think is because it mimics tree bark, which they inhabit naturally. So they really like cardboard. It's also dry cardboard. You're right; it tends to be a dry surface. So we used to find them in the boxes all the time. And once we had the employees, we had a picture of them on the wall because we wanted all the employees to know exactly what they look like, and that you don't fool around with these guys. So that's the brown recluse spider, and it's something that you really should pop on the internet, take a look at it. You can find it anywhere in the country. They're native to the South because they like the hot and dry. But because of shipping, you'll find them sometimes in boxes and that's how we ended up with them, is boxes coming in from the South is how we ended up with them in our house.
Yeah. Isn't that something?
Oh.
Yeah, it definitely pays to be aware and be as educated as possible and be safe.
Absolutely. I was telling Glenn that before growing up, there was my mother's doctor was bitten in the hand, and he was a surgeon and lost his surgery license. He just couldn't perform surgery anymore. So this is a very devastating thing that can happen. And yeah, like you said, education is clearly the best in so many aspects of our life. But I you know what, Michael, just listening to you, I'm so proud to hear when something bad happens, there's so many people that can turn to the negative side And, you know, you've rallied around your the horse world, and the horse world has in turn rallied around you and made you part of its family. And just the sheer number and amazing names that came out to support you at your benefit. And I know you weren't able to attend. Gosh, that must have been so hard not to get out there and be a part of it and be a part of that clinic that was held in your honor. But, you know, how can you thank people like that and the whole family that surrounded you and wrapped their wings around you and kind of took care of you?
Well, first time hearing it, you go, oh, my gosh, is this really real? Is this it's almost surreal. But I think all of these people, because we're so compassionate and we're so unselfish with their time, because of them and the horse and their families, I'm just truly honored to be considered a friend and a fellow horseman. And each of them have graced me in their own way. And I think that just to be in amongst these people in consideration of what you've worked so hard for, all my life, is all I've wanted to do is work with horses and to do my best to make a difference, despite whatever stage I was speaking from. And the perspective that I approach it from is just, I don't think of it any different than anybody else. It's just how I get around and how I approach a lot of situations in life. So to be considered with all of the things that I personally have experienced has really only lended itself in a positive way to be able to share. And that...
Well, you've done it, my friend.
That is
you have done
absolutely
it.
Incredible.
Well, great job. You have made a positive impact on so many people, and so many people look up to you, and you're just, I'm proud to have you on the show, my friend. It's fantastic.
Well, I always say it takes one to know one, and I'm grateful for the opportunity. And it is about sharing. And unfortunately, we live in a society and we're consumed by the negative. And when you think of situations that we've all experienced at one point or another, particularly with horses, this event, for example, and people coming together and rallying around people that they care about and have respect for, it says a lot for mankind, and it says a lot for my friends, it says a lot for the horse industry, and it encourages me, it gives me strength to continue to heal and, get back out there and keep sharing the message that the horse has shared with all of us. And, what more can you ask for?
Amen, well,
Michael,
brother. We're going to definitely have you back on the show. We appreciate you stopping by here this morning, and on a personal note, Jennifer and I will give you a call on our drive tomorrow.
I look forward to that, and I thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to participate, and that in and of itself is a great gift, and I thank you. It's a heartfelt thanks to all, so thank you very much.
All right. Bye, Michael. Take care.
Take care. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Bye, Michael.
All right. I posted that link about the brown recluse spider on Facebook, so you guys can take a look and become educated so that you don't have to go through what Michael has had to go through over the last year. Well, we're going to bring our next guest in. Go ahead.
I was going to say he's had such a tough start, and then to have this happen after the big accident, and to stay so positive and to keep going, I just, he's very deserving of all the love that he's received.
No question. Let's go to our next guest right away. We're going to change the tone of things here a little bit, and we're going to bring Courtney Young on. Why don't you introduce her there, Jamie?
All right. Well, if you guys are on the internet at all, you must have gone to the 3 Days, 3 Ways blog. Last time we talked to Courtney, she was doing the Thelwell Pony Lookalike Contest. And I do believe that you got it right, choosing the correct Thelwell Pony, because, oh my gosh, there was a string of the cutest ponies ever. And this little one won. You can go to 3 Days, 3 Ways, I believe is the website. Courtney, is that correct?
That's right. It's 3days3waysblog.com, and I invite everyone to come check it out and join the team.
It's always a great read, and there's great interviews and awesome pictures, and the three is spelled out, so it's not the letter. It's not the number. It's THREE, Dave's threewaysblog.com. And you are our fashionista expert, and you can see so many fantastic fashion things on your website. I especially like the photograph of the photographer in the jeans and sport coat. That was kind of nice. So what's going on right now? How are you?
I am doing well and staying warm, I'm sure, like everyone else right now in the winter cold here in Virginia. And so that's giving me a lot of time to think about fashion and style and follow the trends. And I thought it'd be fun to share with all of your listeners a little bit about what I'm thinking about these days.
Please do.
Are you guys game for that?
Oh, yeah. Bring it on. I'm here to learn.
Great. I've been thinking, you know, as riders, we have a lot of opportunity for fashion. And one thing is, you know, of course, on the horse when you're at home, when you're hanging out with your, you know, stylish friends, or when you're at a clinic, we've got a lot of options. When, you know, at competitions, it's a little bit different. So I thought I would talk a little bit about when you're on your own, when you're not wearing formal attire, and then also when you're at competitions, talk a little bit about trends in both places. Trends that I'm seeing on the runway are very much applicable to what you can wear when you're riding your horse at home, at a clinic, or something like that.
Courtney, let me paint for you.
Yeah.
Let me show you your blank canvas, okay? Let me show you what you're working with here. Okay, on a daily basis, I slap on my old black Ariat paddock boots, and I am wearing a pair of jeans. Most of the day, I am also wearing a pair of half chaps that are black that do match my boots because they're both 30. And then I will have on some sort of long sleeve T-shirt and either a vest or a coat over that, because I am a Phoenix. I will wear a ball cap every day and then quickly replace it with my helmet and then replace it back so nobody sees my helmet hair, as short a time hatless as possible. That is what you are working with. So anything you say will be an improvement. I'm sure my husband would like to see a little bit better fashion around the farm. So this is what you have. Go.
So attractive.
Well,
That's very attractive,
that
Jamie.
I think, first of all, that you've got some really great style going for you. I think there's some of the things that you mentioned, actually, that sounds really cute. First of all, paddock boots are absolutely in. I keep seeing them all over the place. I'll pick them up off the rack and be like, these are my paddock boots. I wear these to the barn, you know, and they're at L.L. Bean or, you know, on the rack somewhere else, and, you know, I wear Ariat paddock boots too. So I would say, actually, there's only one thing that I would throw into your outfit, which again, I think sounds pretty cute, and it's one of the trends I was thinking about, and it's a sailor shirt. It's a striped kind of mariner shirt, you know, blue and white stripes, skinny stripes, easy to find. You can find it at J. Crew for like $60. Also, another company called Chance Company has one for women. For men, St. James, which is kind of like a sailor-feeling store, they've got some really great sweaters. And so both for men and women, this is a really easy addition to whatever you're wearing. You're wearing jeans, you're wearing paddock boots or whatever other kind of shoe, throw on a striped shirt and you're hip, you're stylish. You can put it over, you can wear it with breeches, you can wear it with jeans and you look good. And it would even look cute with a baseball cap, throw your hair in a ponytail, whatever. Super easy. One of my favorites, I was wearing one yesterday. I have one that I stole from my partner. It's John Varvatos, and it's a men's shirt actually, but it fits me really, really well and I love the cut, and you're good to go, and it's absolutely full-blown on the runway. It's hip everywhere. Everyone wants one, and it's easy to get and work into your wardrobe.
I've got a new name for Jamie. I have a new name for you. Your new mafia name is Jamie. Should it be Jamie First Mate Jennings? Or how about Jamie Master Chief Jennings?
I like it. I like those. They don't sound tough, though.
No, they don't really sound tough. How about Jamie the Seaman Jennings?
There. Oh, That could be bad.
That could go in the wrong direction. I don't know that I recommend that one.
This is PG, Glenn, for crying out loud. But no, Courtney, so vertical stripes are back in is what you're saying.
Horizontal stripes are in, okay. Yeah, run with them, seriously. Whether they're wide or thin, I really like the thin ones, but really it's so easy. Look at J. Crew for women's, Chance Co. for women's, and St. James for men's, and it's so easy. You know, it's not complicated at all. I just watched Coco Before Chanel about Coco Chanel. And, you know, as that movie would say it anyway, she was the one that really brought them back in when women were wearing, you know, corsets and petticoats. She kind of threw that all away, and she saw a bunch of sailors at the seaside one day wearing the striped sailor shirts, and she adopted them herself. And so it's really, it's a fashion staple, and it's definitely all the rage, and it's easy for us riders to incorporate that into whatever we're wearing and look like were just as fashionable as Coco Chanel, which is excellent.
Now, wait a minute, Courtney. Back up here a little bit. Isn't it you're saying horizontal stripes, right?
Yep.
Isn't it horizontal stripes that are supposed to make you look fat?
Well, you know, that's what they say, the sort of like, you know, if you want to, you know, vertical stripes are slimming, horizontal stripes are not. And I think
I don't
true.
Need
I
to look any fatter, Courtney. You know, fatter is not where I'm going here.
I think that you would look really sharp with these horizontal stripes. I think for, you know, perhaps a woman who is very, very busty, she might not love the look, but I think in general it's pretty flattering. I mean, you're so stylish, Glenn. You're up on all of the tips and the trends.
Yeah,
you know,
busty
I don't know
is
if
not
I myself
a problem.
Would
I don't
wear
really have
stripes
that.
On my skirt. But
busty
you're
is
in
not
it,
a
you know
problem
it.
For me either. Busty is not a problem for me either, Glenn, so... Horizontal stripes it is. Just make sure they're thin stripes.
Hey, there you go. Maybe that's the trick. The other trend that I wanted to point out that's all the rage on the runways is that the 70s are very in. And you can really, you know, you could make or break this trend, but I like it, especially for women, because I love the, you know, those kind of like secretary blouses with the bows. Do you guys know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. It's like all the 70s TV shows.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, they're super cute, and I love them, and it's something else that you can wear, again, if you want to throw that on over your jeans, whatever. But I think with, you know, a pretty, you know, cream kind of secretary top with some, you know, just classic beige breeches in your boots, whether you're wearing half chaps and paddock boots or, you know, your dress boots, I think it looks really cute. You know, it's something if you're meeting up with friends for a trail ride or... you know, if you're going to a clinic, I think it would be super, super cute. I just snagged one at a thrift store the other day, which is the great thing about something that's a kind of a retro trend that, you know, you can go to a thrift store and pick one up for like $8, you know, so it's the right price. I would also encourage that one. I would say, though, to be careful, I probably wouldn't wear one at like a jumping clinic. You know, I think that the bow might be bouncing around. That might not be quite the look you're going for there. But
does this mean my olive green leisure suit is back in?
Oh, I don't know about that, Glenn. Although I'm delighted by the fact that you have an olive green leisure suit. As I said, you know, I would be careful with this trend, and careful meaning... go with the secretary's shirt, not so much the leisure suit. But I appreciate your enthusiasm, Glenn. That's good.
Glenn, just because she said 70s style is back in, you do not put an afro on your helmet and some gold chains around your neck. We are not going for that 70s look, okay? This
That's
is
right.
Classic
I got
feminine
the
70s.
Disco ball above my desk here. I'm all ready to go.
You're going to have to rein them in. You're going to have to rein them in. It's all gone
Lord.
Awry.
Poor Jennifer. Sorry, Jen. His wife. Probably.
She's going to have to deal with the consequences. But there are a couple other trends that I wanted to talk about that are good for competitions, too, because I'm sure we're all starting to think about our spring competition season, where we're going to go, and, of course, what we're going to wear. And the two trends that I wanted to mention actually seem sort of opposite, but for me actually go very much together, which is tweed jackets as well as high-tech fabric. So it's sort of like a throwback to the past, kind of vintage, and then something very futuristic. High-tech fabrics, you know, stuff that's water repellent and wicking and all that kind of stuff. I love Tweed, as you guys know, through the blog. I'm always posting kind of vintage photos, and I just think it's such a, you know, classic style is classic. It always works. Very Jackie O. And the great thing about Tweed is, you know, you can get a Tweed jacket just about anywhere. I mean, you can get it at your local tack store. You can get it, you know, an online tack store. I love Smythe jackets, S-M-Y-T-H-E. Not, you know, they don't make jackets explicitly for riders, but a Tweed jacket is a Tweed jacket. You know, it looks good whether you're wearing your jeans and your paddock boots or whether you're wearing boots and breeches. So that's a retailer that I would look into. And then also, you know, I'm here in Virginia now, and Middleburg is a stone's throw away. I just love, and I hate to even say it because I don't want anyone else to get this amazing deal that they have there, but the Middleburg Tack Exchange is amazing. And again, you know, it's, you know, you're getting something that might cost $300-$400 for, you know, under $100 sometimes. So that's the Tweed. And I also think, you know, it's kind of interesting. I think it's my guess, that, you know, I'm an eventer, you know, with 3D Throughways, and we're seeing more and more Tweed at events, which is unusual. You know, I think that was more in the hunter ring, but I think, hunters are, you know, they know their stuff. They're it's part of the world is about fashion and style, and I love that. And we're seeing more of that Tweed, I think, come over as hunters start to event as well. And I think it's a wonderful influence that I welcome from our hunter jumper friends, for sure.
Wait. Okay, let me get this straight, because I'm an eventer as well. And when we go to events, it is white or tan breeches and black coats.
Yep.
Maybe you'll pop in and maybe blue coat every once in a while, and everybody goes, oh, my God, their coat is blue. Everybody wears black. You're telling me that right now people are wearing Tweed to horse trials?
I'm seeing more and more Tweed. You're right. You're absolutely right that most people are wearing black with white or, you know, kind of beige breeches. That's really classic. It works. I have an outfit that looks like that. I being into fashion, I love people who are sort of doing something different. I mean, Wendy Lewis is sort of my favorite. What she wears when she rides looks amazing. She wears a navy jacket with cream breeches, which is just beautiful. It looks amazing. So it's really not about what is everyone else wearing. It's about what do I want to wear, what feels good to me, what looks good to me, what looks good with my horse. And I'm seeing more and more Tweed, and I do think I attribute it in part to our hunter jumper friends, but also if you'll notice, I've seen Bruce Davidson obviously at a lot of competitions and a lot of the lower level competitions. Again, this is not for your FEI kind of competition, not for Rolex, but at a lower level competition, if you're going novice or training, you know, the Tweed, wearing your Tweed is actually very correct in England. That's what you would see. And Bruce Davidson, having spent so much time in England, that's what he wears. And so I'm really seeing the influence from him as well as from 100 Jumper Friends and the fact that it's just, it looks so good. So, yeah, I'm seeing it more and more. It's not overwhelming, but I encourage it. And that is certainly what I'll be wearing this spring.
You know what? If Bruce can do it, we can do it because, you know, Bruce.
Hey, absolutely.
If anything, you know, when I think fashion icon, I think Bruce Davidson. So I'm going to go with that.
I think it's safe to say if he's setting the trend, then we can all follow. The other trend that I wanted to mention that we mentioned in our 2011 fashion predictions and hopes is a high-tech fabric. And we found a retailer, Shannon Crocker, who does fashion stuff with me. She found at the World Equestrian Games, a retailer there called Animo Italia, A-N-I-M-O. They've got some high-tech fabric. And then I don't know if you guys have seen the new – have you guys seen the new Chronicle Connection, their new online magazine?
No.
I saw it
no.
Yesterday, actually. They sent out an email about it, but I did not get to go in and take a look at it yet.
Well, they've just launched this online digital magazine, which I think is very, very cool. I'm all about that because I love the formats of the magazines, but it's great to be able to get them right on my computer. And they profiled the Natalie breeches, Natalie with an H right there in the middle, N-A-T-H-A-L-I-E, which was sort of similar to the Animo Italia, you know, high-tech fabric. So, you know, if you dump your coffee on your lap, you know, it's not going to, it might be hot, but it's not going to soak into your britches. So again, something kind of cool, you know, sort of futuristic feeling, but all of the writers over at the Chronicle gave the Natalie breeches a good runaround and really liked them. And I think they've got great input as far as, you know, fit and style and flattery is also, you know, as well as, you know, what's actually working in the tack. So I'd go with those as well.
This definitely has given me a lot to think about and a lot to look at. And I'm definitely going to head over to, we have a giant consignment store here, and just find a tweed jacket because I'm going to rock that style, girl. I'm going to rock it. People are going to go, what are you doing wearing tweed? And I'm going to say threewaysblog.com, people. Hello, check it out. It's the fashion.
Hello.
Well, Courtney, we unfortunately are running out of time, but as always, we love talking to you. And definitely you guys check out her blog. I love the one thing I wanted to mention about the blog is the girl in her bedroom with all the ribbons around her bedroom. Hello,
I
totally did that
first.
Too. Yeah, really?
It basically was my room.
Yeah, me
too. I thought it was you.
We had the wire on the top, and then I'd climb up there and hang all my 100 jumper ribbons, and, of course, you get 40 with each show. So, I mean, I packed my room. I had double layers. I love this. I love the picture, and I'm glad that you are a sister in the ribbon hanging in the room as well.
Good. Well, it's always so nice to talk with you guys, and keep Glenn in check there for me with the 70s trend. Don't let him take it too far.
I got my leisure suit on. I got the disco ball going. And actually, Jennifer came up with a terrific gangster name for Jamie. Jamie, when you're sporting your wool jacket with your sailor shirt underneath, how about Jamie Walk the Plank Jennings?
I like it. I like it. But, Glenn, if I see you walking around this weekend with your shirt unbuttoned, throwing some chest hair and gold chains out, I'm done. I'm leaving.
Don't worry there, Jamie. Don't worry there.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Courtney. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Why aren't we having her go along this weekend? She could tell us what all the fashions are.
I know. She's way better at all this stuff than we are, but awesome to talk to her. Awesome to have her on.
Well, it's time. This half hour is sponsored by, actually this whole show is sponsored by Back on Track. So let's take a break for Back on Track. We'll play our daily song. We have something new for you today. And then we'll be back with the weekly horse health report from thehorse.com with Christy and the gang.
Back on Track products are endorsed by many of the top dressage, eventing, and show jumping riders worldwide. But they are not just for the pros. Any level of rider can benefit from their unique line of therapeutic products for horses, humans, and dogs. Back on Track has some new products available, exercise boots, bell boots, and western saddle pads. You can find them at backontrackproducts.com. That's backontrackproducts.com.
I had my pride, I would not fight. I had invested.
Templeton Thompson, I Stood My Ground. You're listening to Horses in the Morning, brought to you by Back on Track. I'm Jamie Jennings, and with me, of course, is Glenn the Geek. And it is time, of course, for our weekly horse health report. And Christy is going to be on with us. And this is for all of you, you know, people with really big hearts and maybe some small pocketbooks that want to start a horse rescue. Do I have it right, Christy?
Yes, you do. Yes, you do.
Well, and, go ahead, yeah.
Well, before we get started, I did want to say that I totally hear you on hanging all your ribbons up in the bedroom on your wire, because I did that too. And the other thing I have to say is that since I grew up showing saddlebreds, you guys sound really boring with your clothing.
Oh, yeah.
I think, you know, fashion. Most of the crowd I was running with was a little bit closer to Glenn's side of this one, so I just wanted to say that.
My leisure suit is looking good. That could be my mafia name, Jamie. Glenn the Leisure Suit.
Glenn the Leisure Suit.
Leisure suit Larry over here with his style.
Perfect. Well, we wanted to talk a little bit, you know, normally we focus pretty exclusively on horse health care, but we do have some topics on our website relating to the business aspect of horse care and farm management and things like that. And one thing, we talked a little bit about rescuing horses recently, and I wanted to talk a little bit about the business aspect of that with Milt Toby, who is with us on that discussion as well. And Milt has a couple of suggestions for people who are thinking about starting up rescues, not just, you know, rescuing one horse or whatnot, but, you know, if you see a real need for a new rescue in your area, some things to think about to make sure that you're successful. And Milt, take it away. You had a number one thing that you wanted to start with, I believe.
Well, the first thing that I think people need to think, and I also want to emphasize that we're not trying to discourage people from starting rescues, because clearly there's a need for that everywhere. But if the rescue fails, you become more of the problem and less of the solution. And I think the first thing that a person needs to ask themselves is, are you the person who needs to set up a rescue? You know, it's a fundamental question that I think a lot of people ignore, because they're very kind-hearted, they're very big-hearted, they want to help. But a lot of times, I think the money that you would put into your own rescue might be better spent supporting an established rescue in the area. You know, people may not want to hear that, but that often is the best use of funds. So I think the first question is, am I the best person to do this? And everything else that happens is going to depend on that answer.
And what helps you answer that question?
I think there are a couple of things. One is whether there is an actual need for another rescue in your community or your area. You know, sometimes there is, sometimes there isn't. But the real issue, I think, is, have I got enough money to get started? It's very easy to see an abused or neglected horse or horses and think, I need to take these in, or because nobody else is going to do it. But you always need to think that a rescue, no matter how charitably minded it is, still is a business, and it has to be operated like a business. And if you can't run it as a business, I think it will eventually fail. You know, the Small Business Administration says that 90% of small businesses that fail because they don't have enough startup money. And I think that would apply to rescues as well. So you first need to look at your capital.
And you're not so likely to get a loan for a charitable organization from the bank, yes?
I think that was very unlikely in the past, and I think it's almost impossible with the economic situation right now. A rescue has no way to make a profit, so a banker loaning money to a rescue is basically donating it with the hope that they'll get it back. There isn't a profit incentive or a profit motive at all, so banks just aren't going to buy that. That doesn't mean you shouldn't do all the business planning you would do ordinarily if you were looking for a loan, though. That's what lets you know whether this is a good financial idea for you or not.
And you touched a little bit on the fact that it wasn't going to make a profit. And as a lot of people are probably already aware, there is a nonprofit status termed 501c3 in this country that allows donations to your organization to be tax deductible. How do you go about getting 501c3 status? Because, I mean, surviving on donations is about how you're going to have to survive with the rescue.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Christy. And it really is survival on donations. You're relying on the charity of others to support your charity. And a lot of people are not going to donate unless they can take a tax deduction. And a lot of foundations won't donate money to an organization unless it's tax deductible as well. And the only way you do this is you file with the IRS to become what's called a 501c3 organization. And the way this works, you have to incorporate in your home state first. You have to become a corporation. It's a tax-exempt corporation status at the state level. This is fairly easy. Doesn't cost very much. The next step is you get a tax identification number. And this is really important because it separates the business part from your personal assets, and you want to protect your personal assets as best you can. Then finally, you wind up filing a very lengthy, very complicated form with the IRS requesting 501c3 status. Once you get the status, then donations to your charity become tax deductible, and you become much more viable as a fundraiser. But the process is very long. The last 501c3 I set up wasn't for a rescue specifically. It was for a veterinarian friend in Michigan who was trying to set up a foundation to help working ponies in Cambodia and Thailand. And it took us a year and a half between the time we got it filed and the time we finally got approval. So that's a period of time when you'll be getting some donations but not as many. And you need to plan for that when you're putting your business plan together.
How much did it cost as far as attorney's fees goes, if you don't mind us asking?
I don't mind asking. I donated the attorney fees because this was a very close personal friend and because I believed in the cause. I would have charged at least $1,000, maybe more. It's simpler if you're starting from scratch. If you have an established business that you're trying to convert into a 501c3, there's a whole lot more paperwork. If you have a clean slate, it's easier. But the filing fees are also pricey. If you're expecting to get more than $10,000 a year in donations, the initial filing fee is $750. If you're expecting to get less than $10,000 a year in donations, the filing fee is $300. But if you're not getting $10,000 a year in donations, that's not going to be a whole lot of help for your rescue. So it's time-consuming, and it's relatively expensive. And a lot of people can't afford to start the process to allow them to make money in donations. So it's sort of a vicious circle.
So we talked a little bit about having a year's worth of operating costs in the bag before you get started. Just for fun, Jamie, Glenn, Jennifer, any of you guys, what would you estimate it's costing to keep a horse these days where you are? So we're in different parts.
I would say it costs me about $200 a month per horse.
Okay.
And that's having my own property.
Right.
At home. Yeah. Here in Lexington, Kentucky, you can about quadruple that if you're going to keep them at home, just because of the price of land. But you really can't board a horse around here for less than $300 a month by the time you, because you have to pay for a lot of your own stuff. Yeah.
And this is for a healthy horse, correct?
It's for a horse. Yes.
He's
healthy. He's normal. He gets his feet shod. He gets normal, boring shots and maybe goes to a couple of horse shows a year. Yeah.
And with a rescue, you're going to be dealing with an abused horse, a neglected horse. So the cost is going to go up.
Yes.
So that's something else to keep in mind when you say, you know, how much do you need to get started? Let's say you're planning a rescue with 5 horses, just to throw out a rough number. If we take Jamie's number of $200 a year per horse for a healthy horse, you're talking $2,400 a year per horse just in cost, or, excuse me, you know, in a good bit more than that when you start multiplying horses, much higher, of course, in Lexington, going to vary a lot based on where you are. And then when you add all the vet bills into that, you know, you're going to have to be able to buy a new farm, basically, with what you have
right,
set aside
yeah.
for a rescue.
On that same note, Mel, question for you, and probably Christy, you can put onto this too. When you start a rescue, I'm guessing that many people who start rescues start them because they want to save the animal from a bad situation. First, you save the animal. But the second half of the equation is eventually you have to find somebody else who would responsibly privately home that horse. You adopt it out. Because if all you do is save them all the time, the collection never ends. Because if all you were going to do is take in horses and save them, you could do that pretty economically. You turn them out in the pasture and you care for them economically. You can do that very inexpensively. But you can only collect so many. So I think you're really right on track here talking about the cost, because the cost of running a facility where you can not only take in the animal and make him healthy, but provide the public with the ability to adopt him back out again, that's where you run into some serious dollars.
Yeah, that's a
for
really
sure.
good point. That's a very good point, because the first step is rescuing the horse from, as you say, a worse situation. But if you can't guarantee that you're going to continue to improve the situation over the horse's life or until you adopt him out, then I think you're doing a disservice to the animal. And you're right. The paperwork and the work in getting a horse adopted out and getting the word out, you're dealing with the paperwork, dealing with you want to investigate. You want to make sure that you're adopting the horse out to somebody who's a reliable person. That's expensive and it's time-consuming and it requires people. And, again, you're depending on volunteer help a lot, and sometimes volunteer help isn't the best option. Sometimes you actually need to pay somebody to do it, and this is another outlay. You're way beyond the cost of
right.
caring for the
yeah.
horse.
That's interesting. I was just talking to the folks over at Rerun yesterday about some things, and that was – very much at the forefront of their thought process anytime they do anything is, A, get the word out so people know there's animals for adoptions, and B, you take the animal in and you make him healthy, but that's not good enough for your average adopter. Most people who want to adopt a horse need more than a horse that's, okay, he's healthy, that's it. He needs to have some kind of basis, just like when you adopt a dog at the kennel or at the dog pound. If you know he's leash trained, if you know he's at least partially housebroken, that animal's going to find a home much, much faster than the one under other on his little card on the front of his kennel says, we don't know anything. He's
exactly.
not too likely to get adopted out.
Exactly. When you're thinking of adopting horses, the more you can do to make life easier on the person who's adopting the horse, the more likely you are to find someone to do it, and that takes work.
It does take work. It takes less than keeping them for long periods of time yourself, though. And, you know, I've not adopted a horse from a rescue, but just back to the financial aspect, I recently adopted a dog last year, and turned out he's perfectly healthy, but he has a heart murmur that was cause for concern when they took him into the rescue. And they probably spent a little over $1,000 to getting this dog checked out with the vet and then taking him out to the university hospital and then doing a telemedicine consultation and all that. And turns out, as they say, something else should be what kills him. But that was a lot of money they spent. You know, the adoption fee that I paid to them doesn't come anywhere near covering that. So, again, just remember, rescue is basically a money outgoing business without those donations. So I think, as Milt said, sometimes having volunteer people to help is not always the best thing. You may need to hire somebody to get the word out about those horses and be constantly working the donations coming in so that you can stay afloat.
Yeah, public relations, I think, is often the hardest part of a horse rescue.
And it's usually the part that people don't want to do, because you want to be out there with the horses. That's why you're starting the rescue.
Yeah, one of the things that I always suggest to people, well, two things really. When you're setting up your business plan, you want to talk to other horse rescues in your area to get some idea of how much it's costing them. And in the process, it's a good idea to volunteer with them and find out what is really involved in the day-to-day, you know, aspects of running a rescue. It isn't all glamorous and saving horses. There's a whole lot of hard work involved, and I'm not sure if some people realize that when they get started.
They may not. And we talked a little bit about having a business plan and making sure that you're going to be able to do this as well after you get some of that initial information from your local rescues. Milt, do you have any tips for us on setting up a good business plan?
You need to think and anticipate as best you can every expense you're going to have. You know, there's going to be expenses associated with the rescue of the horse itself. There's going to be probably labor costs. There's going to be utilities. There's going to be feed, you know, grain and hay. There's going to be insurance. Depending on your state, even if you have volunteer workers, you may be required to have workers' compensation insurance, which is very expensive. You need to plan for that sort of thing. You just need to put together a spreadsheet that says, this is what I expect to go out over the next year, in the next 2 years, the next 3 years, whatever, and this is what I expect to come in. And initially, the total on the going out column is going to be a whole lot higher than the total on the coming in column.
And Milt, can I add to that?
Yeah,
can
absolutely.
I say, having run big farms and stuff before and being a horse husband all these years, you take those initial numbers, and then after you're done and they all look good, you double them, and then you have a real number.
I think that's probably reasonable, because there will always be something that you don't anticipate. There will be, you know, five starving horses that suddenly you have to take in that you hadn't planned for.
Or, hay, you know, there's no rain and hay goes through the roof and it's all of a sudden five times, you know, what it was before. And, you know, just the farrier needs to come out because now they have abscesses all over the place because it's too wet. You know, it just goes on and on and on.
Yeah. And one of the essential parts of the business plan is you need to decide up front how many horses you can deal with. You know, a lot of times
right.
people start without any thought of where the cutoff point is. And unless you've got a cutoff point, the, you know, the planning you're doing is almost useless. But you also need to ask yourself, am I going to be able to say 10 is the most horses I can take, and if somebody offers me number 11, I'm going to say no. That's really hard for people who are in the rescue business. But it's a decision that you have to make if it's going to be a viable operation.
It's funny you guys are talking about this right now, because my husband, you know, the A-type personality, you know, math major in college, has made me start keeping a list of my finances, and it's called Flyover Farm Finances. And because I'm teaching lessons out here, I'm like, we're doing great. I'm in the black every month. And then he's making me write down everything I spend. And I'm like, wait, I have to write down the money that I spent on the new bridle, and I have to write down the money that I spent on the blankets for the horses, but it was cold out. And then, wait, supplements count too? I was just going with hay and grain. And then, wait a second, you're going to make me write down the gas money that I used to take my horse on a horse, to a horse show? No, that's not fair. Now I'll sit him in the red because I thought I was doing so great. And, yeah, not so much, apparently. So you're right. You have to write down everything and then double it, because, my gosh, he's just plain mean about it. He makes me write down everything.
But that raises an interesting point. In addition to your planning, you have to keep up with this as the process goes along. You need to keep
mm-hmm.
a record. You don't want to go into your accountant at the end of the year on April the 14th with a shoebox full of receipts. They hate that. But you still have to do all the accounting that you would have to do in a business. There just isn't the money coming in. So there's a lot of work and a lot of complication that people don't realize.
Absolutely. And you know what, Milt, where can people get a hold of you if they want to find out more information?
I've got a website. They can contact me through that. It's actually a website for my writing and speaking. But I'm not actually soliciting clients through this at all.
Of course not, but
my time writing.
People
but
may
yeah,
have
I'm
questions.
Happy to answer questions for people. The website is www.miltonctoby.com.
Okay.
Okay,
all
we'll
right.
put a link
to
that in our show notes, too. Yeah.
But again, I do want to emphasize, this isn't an advertisement. I'm not soliciting clients. My malpractice carrier would get upset about that.
Okay.
Absolutely. Okay, well, then we won't link to your website, and people can just go to thehorse.com and find your blog. Yeah, it's Horses and the Law, the blog on thehorse.com. And you guys, unfortunately, as always, we're running out of time. We could keep going about this forever. But again, Milt, thanks so much for joining us again. I know I talked to you a couple months ago. And Christy, as always, thank you for bringing us all the information that's real and that we need to hear and that, yeah, whatever, I guess I should hear too.
Having been self-employed for... Yes, and having been self-employed for a period of time, I can completely feel all your pain on keeping track of all your expenses for tax purposes.
I hate it. I thought I was doing so good.
Well, thanks as always for having us on. Do check out our blog. Do check out our adoption and welfare articles on thehorse.com. And Glenn, I hope you enjoyed yet another blood-free show.
Yes, this was great. You're doing good. Congratulations, by the way. And I'm so excited, too. Apparently, you're coming up, and I'll get to see you in a couple months for real, like in person.
Absolutely.
Good. Good. I'm looking forward to that, too. Well, thanks, guys. We could... We're going to have to come up with a mafia name for Christy, too, for next
week.
Oh,
no.
Christy, can I make a special request?
Absolutely.
Next week, I want something bloody and pussy and gory and disgusting, so Glenn has to lose some weight.
Oh, well, that's fun. Actually, Milt's lovely wife, Roberta, is going to be on with us next week talking about biosecurity and on farms, so I'll make sure that she comes up with some really nasty stories to tell.
Oh, good. Yay.
Great. Thanks. Yeah. I'll be out that day.
Bye, guys.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Thank you.
Wow. Now, see, after that conversation, that makes me just want to run out and get one of our local horse rescues a Lowe's gift card.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
All right. Or gift card to a good accountant, one or the other. Yes.
That was the other thing. I had to get some plants from Lowe's for the front part of the property because it's got to separate the hay from the fence so they don't think that they can get to the hay. He made me write that down. I'm like, but they're plants for the farm. He's like, it still counts. Write it down.
You could have just moved the hay further from the fence.
Yeah, well, we only have 3 acres, Jen. We're working limited here.
You can put it on the back porch so the chickens can sit on it.
Yeah, good idea.
Well, it is much more fun. I totally agree. It's much better and much more satisfying to just stick your head in the sand and only keep track of the expenses you really want to, because you're going to end up good at the end of every month, because keeping track of everything just stinks.
I know. He like wants receipts and stuff. I'm like, I don't have them. I didn't save them.
When did he become your accountant? I didn't know that you had hired him for your accounting work.
I didn't, thank you very much. I was doing just fine on my own till he starts like, we should probably keep track and see what we're spending. And he wants I have to write down every time I get the horses vaccinated and their teeth floated. And now I'm like having to think about it a little bit more. I want to take the puppies to get dewormed tomorrow. And he's like, is that really in the budget? Can't you just wait till they go get their vaccines again? And I'm like, I want to get them dewormed again. I think they have a big pot bellies. He's like such a stickler about where I'm spending my money.
I have Jamie's name. I have her mafia name. Jamie, the honeymoon's over, Jennings. That's the new name.
Oh, I can't even top that one, Glenn. That is so true. But you guys, can I just tell you a funny story about Chad real quick, because he's not here and I can sell him out. And this is like the funniest thing as far as puppies go. He is not a dog person. He is not an animal person. He's not a medical person. So these puppies, I went out to dinner with my girlfriend the other night and I came home. See, this is going to be the gory horse thing that we had to have today. I come home and he's like, Dave, there's something wrong with the puppies. I'm like, what's wrong, honey? He's like, they're throwing up. And the weirdest thing is they're throwing up rubber bands. When did they eat a bunch of rubber bands? I'm like, what? Rubber bands, the only thing I can think of is the little braidettes I braid my horse's mane with. I'm like, they didn't get into those. I go, and he's like, well, they're underneath the paper towel. It just happened. So I lift up the paper towel, and I'm like, those are rubber bands. Those are worms. Oh,
there goes lunch.
Yeah. And now I'm like, baby, we are so taking him to the vet tomorrow. I can't even stand it.
Oh, my God. No wonder they were so fat.
Yeah, exactly. And he's like, rubber bands. I'm like, those are rubber bands.
What do you say to that, the big, tough Air Force guy?
I'm sorry, mister, I can pull 9 G's and fly upside down and do loop-de-loops in an airplane. Actually got a little queasy. He actually got a little queasy. And he has an iron stomach, okay? So this is, it was kind of great to see, actually. And then I made him clean him up.
All right. Well, let's get back to serious stuff, and that's the mafia nicknames. I found a website called gangstaname.com where you put in your name, and it gives you what your gangsta name would be. So I did yours, Jamie Jennings, and you are Nicola Scarface.
Oh.
that's apparently your name. I'm going to put me in here and see what I come out with. I am. Oh, my God. I am Epileptic Petro Barro.
What?
I don't get that one at all. And then Jennifer is Teresa the Enforcer.
I just put in your name, Glenn, and apparently... I just put in your name, and it just called you Wobbly Sloth.
Jennifer, we had a name for you the other day. What was it? I forget now. Is it something we can say on the air?
I don't want to know.
I don't remember either. I don't remember what it was.
I just put in Jennifer's name, and she's Super Monkey Hunter. That's awesome.
Well, the show's downhill here, I'll tell you what.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, but let's just talk about the next couple of days, and then we'll wrap today up. The next couple of days, tomorrow, we will be live. We have some guests and stuff on tomorrow, like normal. And then Friday, we have the recorded episode with Trish Lynn, one of our musical episodes every month. So the music of Trish Lynn, and I did that with the co-host over on the Western radio show, Tammy Sarance, joined me because Jamie was too sick to do it. And then Monday, we are going to be live from the ADA conference, the wholesale show over there in King of Prussia near Philadelphia. And Jamie's going to be in snow up to her eyeballs. And we'll be coming to you live from. Yes?
We're broadcasting live from the North Pole. We are North Pole.
That's pretty much it. Yep, that's what it is.
Yeah.
So Santa will be joining us and the reindeer, and we'll be on live with you with a whole bunch of different guests from the ADA conference there, or the ADA trade show. So we'll be talking products and all kinds of cool things coming out and just having a lot of fun. And then Tuesday we're going to actually have a best of show because we'll be traveling back from there. And then Wednesday again we'll be back to normal. So we have a fun couple of days coming up here on Horses in the Morning. Did we miss anything today, Jamie?
I do want to let everybody know.
Yeah.
Yeah, Secretariat is out on DVD today, so you can go out and buy that. And, of course, if you go to is it Amazon.com, Glenn, that they can go to Horse Radio Network, click on Amazon.com, and we actually get some of your money. So we'll take it.
Yes.
But Secretariat DVD and Blu-ray is released today.
Yeah, stop over to horsesinthemorning.com and click on the little Amazon link. Doesn't cost you any more. It's just that we get a little bit of money back for you doing that. And I've noticed it's $14.99 if you buy it on DVD, which isn't bad at all, actually. Price it. You know, when these movies, especially the first-run movies, used to come out, you remember how expensive they used to be?
Oh, absolutely. You couldn't afford them.
I know, and now they're cheap. So, and then the Blu-ray DVD combo is only like $22 on Amazon. So we're definitely going to be getting this one. You know, I'm not a big buyer of movies because Jennifer and I tend to watch a movie once and then we never want to watch it again. But, you know, the Secretariat and Seabiscuit are movies that we have to own for sure.
Absolutely. It's one of those the horse people have to have in their library. Hey, before we go, Glenn, tell us about Feed XL.
Yes, that's something we were talking about, horse health earlier and healthy horses. Well, you want to make sure your horse is healthy by visiting feedxl.com. One of the things that obviously is the most contributing factor to your horse's health is what you put in your horse's mouth. And FeedXL can help you make sure that you're feeding your horse correctly with the right stuff. And that includes hay and grain and grass and vitamins and minerals and the whole thing. They take a look at it all. It only takes a couple minutes to stop over there to put in some information about your horse, put in some information about what you feed your horse, and it's going to print out a whole bunch of nifty reports, charts, graphs, and everything that shows you if your horse is deficient in an area or if you're giving them too much of something. So you can save a little money by decreasing that and actually put your money over to an area where your horse might be a little bit deficient. So you can make sure that you're feeding your horse correctly
by stopping over to feedxl.com. It'll give you peace of mind in 2011 that you are doing it right. That's about it, I guess.
Absolutely. You know what? I got to go because I got to take these puppies out. They're going crazy.
All right, everybody. Remember, you can listen to all the shows on the Horse Radio Network at horseradionetwork.com, and you can follow us on Twitter at Horse Radio. And, of course, you can find all of our recorded shows right on our website or any of our affiliate websites or iTunes. You can find us there as well. We'll be back again tomorrow, Jamie. Say goodbye.
Goodbye, Glenn, the sleeper hold, the geek.